Today is Friday, April 9th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Junior Dorfo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Britain's Prince Philip dies at 99.
There is inevitably a sense of shock across British society. He was a very senior member of the royal family.
Also, tension heightens between Russia and Ukraine.
The United States is increasingly concerned by recent escalating Russian aggressions in eastern Ukraine, including Russian troop movements on Ukraine's border.
Plus, 12 people beheaded by insurgents in Mozambique. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in the UK. Buckingham Palace officials say Prince Philip, the husband of Queen Elizabeth II, has died. He was 99. Philip spent a month in hospital earlier this year before being released on March 16th to return to Windsor Castle. Philip, also known as the Duke of Edinburgh, married Elizabeth in 1947 and was the longest-serving consort in British history. For more, I reached VOA's Henry Ridgewell.
There is inevitably a sense of shock across British society. He was a very senior member of the royal family, of course, and was always at the Queen's side throughout their 73-year marriage, really. He took a couple of royal tours on his own, but generally you always saw Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip as one. So the country feels it has lost a key figure, a key member of the royal institution.
And what has been the reaction of the Prime Minister?
The Prime Minister really gave a small obituary himself for Prince Philip on the steps of 10 Downing Street earlier Friday. He spoke of the extraordinary service that Prince Philip had given to the country, and he quoted the Queen herself, who at their Golden Jubilee anniversary said that Prince Philip would never accept how much service value he had given to Great Britain, and the rest of the population would never know the debt that they owed him. Boris Johnson repeated those words and really paid tribute to Prince Philip and said that the country's thoughts were with Queen Elizabeth and, of course, with the rest of the royal family as they mourn at this time.
Any funeral arrangements yet, or is it too early?
It's too early to say yet. The only recognition, really, the only communication we've had from Buckingham Palace was a statement that was released both to the media and posted onto the gates of Buckingham Palace this morning, announcing the death of Prince Philip and saying that further announcements would follow and that the royal family, like the rest of people around the world, were mourning his death. So we are expecting further updates throughout the day and in the coming days. Given his seniority within the royal family and given the regard with which he is held by the country and beyond as well, it's of course expected that he will receive a full state funeral, but we don't know the arrangements yet.
That's VOA's Henry Ridgewell speaking with me from London. Under pressure from activists, President Joe Biden on Thursday signed a series of executive actions aimed at curbing gun violence following recent mass shootings. White House correspondent Patsy Witas-Kiwara reports prospects for gun control legislation appear dim for now in the divided U.S. Congress.
Last week's shooting in California that killed four people, including a 9-year-old boy, is the latest gun violence incident in the United States, a problem President Joe Biden sought to address Thursday.
Gun violence in this country is an epidemic.
Through a series of executive actions, including one that aims to stop the proliferation of ghost guns, homemade firearms that lack serial numbers.
Anyone from a criminal to a terrorist can buy this kit in as little as 30 minutes, put together a weapon. You know, I want to see these kits treated as firearms under the Gun Control Act.
A second rule would regulate stabilizing braces, an accessory to increase accuracy, similar to the one used in the Colorado shooting that killed 10 people last month. Past executive actions to regulate firearms parts include the Trump administration's ban on bump stocks, a device that increases a rifle's firing rate. While Biden's actions are significant, only Congress can pass legislation. The Democrat-controlled House of Representatives recently passed measures to expand and close loopholes on background checks, but there is little Republican support in the Senate. Republican Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
What I'm not attracted to is something that doesn't work. And there have been deep-seated philosophical differences between Republicans and Democrats about how to deal with gun violence.
No major gun control legislation has passed since the 1994 federal assault rifle ban that expired in 2004. It has not been renewed due to opposition from Republicans and the powerful gun lobby. Biden nominated David Chipman, advisor to a major gun control group, to lead the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, an agency that plays a key role in gun regulations. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
The United States is increasingly concerned about what it sees as escalating Russian aggression in eastern Ukraine and is discussing Russian troop movements with its NATO allies. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The United States is increasingly concerned by recent escalating Russian aggressions in eastern Ukraine, including Russian troop movements on Ukraine's border. Russia now has more troops on the border with Ukraine than at any time since 2014. 5 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed this week alone. These are all deeply concerning signs. The president spoke with President Zelensky, as you know, last week. In addition to reassurances to Ukrainian officials, the United States, we are also discussing our concerns about the increase in tensions in ceasefire violations and regional tensions with NATO allies. So that's another part of the conversations that is ongoing.
That's White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. Leaders of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee introduced legislation on Thursday to boost the country's ability to push back against China's expanding global influence by promoting human rights, providing security aid, and investing to combat disinformation. The draft measure reflects a hardline sentiment on dealing with China from both Democrats and Republicans in Congress. The 280-page bill addresses economic competition with China, but also humanitarian and democratic values, such as imposing sanctions over the treatment of the minority Muslim Uyghurs and supporting democracy in Hong Kong. China has accused the U.S. of causing humanitarian disasters through foreign military interventions in Beijing's latest broadside in increasingly contentious relations with the Biden administration. The report from the government-backed China Society for Human Rights Studies says U.S. military aggression has caused mass casualties, damage, unrest, and other problems. Relations between Washington and Beijing have been fractious as the U.S. maintains support for Taiwan and sanctions over Chinese policies, including in Hong Kong and Xinjiang. The CDC says cases of coronavirus clusters are increasing in the U.S. in youth sports and daycare centers, while hospitals are reporting more younger adults are being admitted with severe cases of the disease. As VOA's Mariama Diallo reports, coronavirus variants are to blame for the rise.
Speaking at the White House COVID briefing Wednesday, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Rochelle Walensky says cases are rising among younger people as the country sees the increasing prevalence of coronavirus variants.
Across the country, we are hearing reports of clusters of cases associated with daycare centers and youth sports. Hospitals are seeing more and more younger adults, those in their 30s and 40s, admitted with severe disease. Data suggests this is all happening as we are seeing increasing prevalence of SARS-CoV-2 variants, with 52 jurisdictions now reporting cases of variants of concern.
The highly contagious B.1.1.7 variant originated in Britain. It's the most common strain circulating in the U.S. and has been shown to be more transmissible and infectious among younger Americans, she says.
In areas of substantial or high community transmission, CDC guidance specifically suggests refraining from youth sports that are not outside and cannot be conducted at least 6 feet apart. Similarly, large events should also be deferred.
The Biden administration also said Wednesday the federal government is expanding coronavirus vaccine access to all federally qualified community health centers. White House COVID-19 advisor Andy Slavitt.
That we are expanding our community health center vaccine program so that the nearly 1,400 community health centers can sign up to receive and administer doses to their patients.
The U.S. leads the world with more than 30.9 million confirmed cases and more than 559,000 confirmed deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Resource Center. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Medical experts used anatomical diagrams and charts to testify on Thursday that George Floyd was killed by police pinning him to the ground, not a drug overdose, challenging a key assertion by former police officer Derek Chauvin in his murder trial for Floyd's deadly arrest. VOA's Esha Sarai has more.
Pulmonary expert Dr. Martin Tobin testified Thursday that a lack of oxygen likely caused the death of George Floyd, who died after former police officer Derek Chauvin knelt on his neck for over 9 minutes.
Yes, Mr. Floyd died from a low level of oxygen, and this caused damage to his brain that we see, and it also caused a PEA arrhythmia that caused his heart to stop.
Tobin's testimony largely countered the defense's arguments that Floyd's prior health conditions and use of drugs contributed to his death.
The healthy person subjected to what Mr. Floyd was subjected to would have died as a result of what he was subjected to.
The defense has also argued that because Floyd was able to talk, he was breathing, an argument that Tobin countered.
He's complaining to you of difficulty with breathing, but they're also telling me that at that time when he's saying, please, I can't breathe, we know at that point he has oxygen in his brain. And again, it's a perfect example of how it gives you a huge false sense of security, because very shortly after that, we're going to see that he has a major loss of oxygen in the way that he moves his leg. And so it tells you how dangerous is the concept of if you can breathe or if you can speak, you can breathe. Yes, that is true on the surface, but highly misleading. A very dangerous mantra to have out there.
Tobin's testimony echoes that of medical experts earlier in the week who worked in the ambulance and emergency room that received Floyd, one of whom said that Floyd appeared to be dead when they arrived on scene on May 25th. Floyd's death continues to propel the racial justice movement in the United States and beyond. Esha Sarai, VOA News, Washington.
A police commander in the Mozambique town of Palma says 12 people presumed to be foreigners have been found dead at a hotel following an Islamic State-claimed attack. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
12 people, believed to be foreigners, have been found beheaded in the Mozambican town of Palma following an Islamic State-claimed attack. That's according to local police commander Pedro da Silva, in footage aired by Mozambican channel TVM. He said he believed they were foreigners because they were white.
It's difficult to know which nationalities, but Amarula is a hotel that hosted many foreigners at the time of the attack. Many foreigners thought it was the best place to find protection, so they ran there. They had security, but the insurgents were stronger. They broke into the hotel and took 12 citizens of different nationalities, tied them up, and beheaded them there.
The video showed disturbed earth, where Da Silva said the bodies had been buried, adding that he had conducted the funerals. A national police spokesman said they could not confirm the contents of the footage, but were investigating. Militants attacked the town, which is adjacent to gas developments and home to numerous foreign companies, on March the 24th. The government has confirmed dozens of people were killed, and aid workers say tens of thousands have been forced to flee. On Sunday, the military said Palma was now completely safe. A meeting of regional leaders about how to respond to the insurgency was due to conclude on Thursday. Mozambique's president, Felipe Nyusi, has come under pressure to accept international help to fight the rapidly escalating violence in the northern Cabo Delgado province. On Wednesday, he said Mozambique would tackle some aspects of the problem alone, for reasons of sovereignty.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. 23 years after a peace deal was signed in Northern Ireland, there are growing fears of a return to sectarian violence after several nights of rioting in Belfast. Pro-British unionist supporters are angry at elements of the Brexit agreement. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Tensions boiled over into violence as pro-British unionist supporters vented their anger. The protests were focused around Shankill Road, the long-standing frontier between the mostly Protestant, Unionist and Catholic pro-Irish nationalist communities. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson called for dialogue, and leaders of the power-sharing government in Belfast condemned the violence.
Just as it was wrong in the past and was never justified, so it is wrong now.
That it's only through democratic politics that we can solve our problems and concerns.
Those problems are rooted in Britain's exit from the European Union, which made the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland an external frontier of the European Union. It was feared that any hard border here would provoke a return to sectarian violence. So part of the Brexit agreement, called the Northern Ireland Protocol, stipulates that all checks on goods travelling from Britain to Northern Ireland should instead be carried out at ports on either side of the Irish Sea. That has created an effective border between mainland Britain and Northern Ireland, says analyst Katie Hayward.
This has led to some sense of unease, in particular amongst unionism and loyalist communities who feel that Northern Ireland's place in the union is under threat.
There were widespread predictions that Britain's EU exit could undermine the 1998 so-called Good Friday peace agreement. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is the Voice of America. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is calling for another arduous march to fight severe economic difficulties, for the first time comparing them to a 1990s famine that killed hundreds of thousands. A South Korean oil tanker held for months by Iran amid a dispute over billions of dollars held in Seoul has been freed. It happened early Friday ahead of further talks between Tehran and world powers over its tattered nuclear deal. Seven suspected militants have been killed and four soldiers wounded in two separate gunfights in India-controlled Kashmir. Police say militants hid inside a mosque as government forces cordoned off a neighborhood in southern Shopian town on Thursday. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The World Health Organization says Africa's rollout of COVID-19 vaccine has been hampered by supply shortages and delays in planned deliveries. To date, the WHO reports 4.3 million cases of COVID-19 in Africa, including 114,000 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
A few countries are bucking the trend and making good progress in immunizing their populations against the deadly coronavirus. The World Health Organization says Morocco has purchased 8.7 million doses of vaccine and has administered more shots to its population than any other African country. It adds a few other countries, notably Ghana, Rwanda, and Angola, also have distributed a significant proportion of their vaccine within a short time. However, WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says more than 1 billion Africans still have not been able to avail themselves of the life-saving tool. She says Africa has administered only 2% of the more than 600 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine that has been dispensed globally.
10 African countries that have carried out the most vaccinations have now used up over two-thirds of the supplies that they've received. At the same time, countries such as Benin, Comoros, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and South Sudan have faced delays in rolling out vaccines due to constraints around funding, planning, and human resource shortages.
In another setback, Moeti says delays in COVAX shipments are expected to continue this month because India is fighting a severe second wave of COVID-19. As a consequence, she says India, which is a major manufacturer of the AstraZeneca vaccine, has temporarily banned exports. The European Medicines Agency Wednesday announced a possible link between the AstraZeneca vaccine and unusual blood clots with low platelets. Despite that, Moeti says she would welcome delivery of that vaccine as soon as it is available. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The African Union has dropped plans to secure COVID-19 vaccines from the Serum Institute of India for African nations and is exploring options with Johnson & Johnson the head of the African Center for Disease Control and Prevention, said on Thursday. The institute will still supply the AstraZeneca vaccine to Africa through the COVAX vaccine sharing facility, the head of Africa CDC told reporters, but the African Union will seek additional supplies from Johnson & Johnson.
In a good vaccination program, predictability of availability of vaccines is very, very important so that you know when and how to use your first doses and how to counsel people that have received their first doses to come in and get their second doses there. But again, as I said last week, the situation with the Serum Institute and the government of India imposing restriction, it makes it very complicated for our vaccination program across the continent.
That's John Nkengasong, head of the African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Nigerian security officials are hunting for dozens of heavily armed militia members who attacked the police headquarters and freed hundreds of inmates in the southeastern state of Imo. Residents say the city of Owerri remains tense but calm amid police and military reinforcements. For more, I spoke with the state's former information commissioner, Vitalis Ajumbe, on the rising fear among residents.
The level of confidence in the security agents is low. And I also, I think, the morale of the security agents, especially the police, went down low after the NSAS thing. From what I got at divisional police offices, some of them get locked late after 8 p.m., which means if you have a matter, an urgent security situation in the night, no police will come out to rescue you, to assist you.
There are reports that security is so bad that even policemen no longer go to work with their uniforms.
That is true for now, except they're wearing it in their offices, and probably after that they will leave. They will fold it and put it in their bags or whatever. Everybody is afraid, especially the release of the over 1,844 criminals detained in the prison. And you can imagine that. The criminals know them, but they do not know the criminals. So that's the fear.
Nigeria's Vice President, Yemi Osinbajo, visited Owerri. Do you think his visit would positively impact on the poor security situation in the state?
He came to see the damages and made his comment. And I don't think that will help matters. Well, I think what will help matters is total overhaul of the police system. Even though the former Inspector General of Police arrived in Imo State the same day, while he was here, he was removed as the Inspector General of Police and another appointed. They need to build confidence in the police. They need to, especially their welfare, because they are on the line of danger.
Government officials are blaming members of the Biafran resistance group as perpetrators of this attack in the city of Owerri. Has anyone claimed responsibility for this attack?
From what we gathered, the IPOB received a statement that they were not responsible. But we should not be so quick to accuse any person. They have to do the job of investigation, because it may be pursuing IPOB. Maybe another group elsewhere has also emerged.
That's former Imo State Information Commissioner Vitalis Ajumbe speaking with me from Owerri. NASA eyes the first possible day to launch its flying robot on Mars. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us the week in space.
Just two buddies out on an interplanetary road trip this week as NASA's Perseverance and Ingenuity rovers posed for a selfie on the red planet. NASA says launching a helicopter from the Martian surface could now be just days away.
Release.
Last July, the space agency sent the Perseverance rover on a months-long journey to Mars spanning almost 55 million kilometers. Perseverance must now find the perfect launch pad for scientists and crew on Earth to test the Ingenuity helicopter. Project manager Mimi Ong says the challenge is chopping through an atmosphere with only 1% of the pressure on Earth.
The first and foremost challenge is to make a vehicle that's light enough, you know, to be lifted. And then second is to generate lift. The rotor system has to spin very fast.
The Wright brothers achieved the first successful flight in 1903, and NASA is looking to recapture that moment by attempting the first powered, controlled flight on another planet. The space agency recently moved the date of Ingenuity's earliest possible flight to April 11th.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful weekend.